There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the bill we got? I mean, the bill we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, away we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Time to check in with our staff meteorologist and tropical weather expert, Dr. Bill Williams, for the latest on Tropical Storm Gordon. Dr. Bill, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Sean.
You and I were just talking during the news break there. I think that it is interesting. I was wondering, you know, what the latest from Hurricane Hunter aircraft was. And you pointed out that, you know, the kind of track that Gordon's on now will take it pretty close to where the Hurricane Hunters fly out of.
That's right. It is definitely going to move into the Gulfport and Biloxi area later tonight, most likely around midnight is the target for landfall. Gordon is located around 125, 135 miles east-southeast of the mouth of the Mississippi River. It's moving northwest at around 15 miles per hour. Highest winds are about 65. There's still an increase in thunderstorm activity occurring around the system, and therefore there's that possibility that it might become a minimal hurricane before landfall around midnight tonight. With the target area being the Gulfport-Biloxi area, the worst part of the storm will be most likely from Biloxi over to Pascagoula. That's where winds could reach up to 70 miles per hour. And if it does become a minimal hurricane, that's where you would find perhaps gusts to 75. And that would include actually the western end of Dauphin Island, and would get in that area of maximum winds for this evening. Here in the Mobile area right now, we're looking for a potential for wind gusts tonight of around 40 to 45 miles per hour. But down in the southwestern portion of Mobile County, we could see winds of 55 miles per hour or so. And again, that will occur through the evening hours. Again, some strengthening could occur. We're watching that. We don't see it yet in the statistics, but thunderstorm activity is increasing. For this afternoon, we're going to see showers developing, and it appears now that the main area of showers and thunderstorms associated with Gordon will probably not get in here till the mid-afternoon or late afternoon hours. And then it won't take long for the winds to increase and the rainfall totals to start really increasing in our area. As for this afternoon, mostly 10 to 20 mile per hour winds out of the east and east northeast. And then as we get into the evening hours, easterly winds of 15 to 30 miles per hour. As I mentioned, gusts to 45 miles per hour. When will be the actual peak in winds here in the Mobile area? It looks like around 9 to 10 this evening, gradually building up through the early evening, reaching a peak around 9 to 10, and then continuing to be very gusty on through midnight and into the mid-morning hours. The wind will gradually become more to the southeast as we get after midnight. Then for tomorrow, as we go through the morning, winds will start to subside. Most of tomorrow will be out of the south and southeast, around 15 to 25 miles per hour, and the rain will become more scattered as we get into the afternoon hours. By then, the center of Gordon will be on up through Mississippi and eventually continue on to track up into Arkansas and Oklahoma, where it's going to produce a lot of rain as it encounters a cold front up in that area. So this storm will be in the news for several days.
You once again, to talk about the timeline here and to point out, if people are looking at radar right now, be it not well defined, but the center of circulation is a little bit to the south-southeast of Pensacola, but you're talking about this thing going in to the west of Biloxi, right?
Yeah, it's going to go into the Gulfport-Biloxi area. The actual center of the storm is really displaced, and when you look at radar pictures, most of the rainfall activity is to the north and east of the center. And so the center is some distance away from the main area of rain. Now, that may start to really wrap around as it gets closer to the coast, and we'll get a little more of the symmetry that you expect in a tropical storm or a hurricane. But right now, most of that activity is to the north and east. So it's really going to be late this afternoon before the main area of rain in that system finally gets into our area and then spreads inland.
Okay, so bands coming in this afternoon, evening, sometime right. overnight for landfall. What about, we mentioned this last hour, talked about it this morning some too. In the past, I've watched these, and you've pointed out that these bands sometimes have tornadoes associated with them. What do you see anything now that leads you to believe yes or no or maybe
that's,
on
that is the possibility. The thunderstorms, some of them are quite strong, that are wrapping around, trying to wrap around the center of that of the storm, and some of those could produce tornadoes, especially as it moves inland. We have a history of that happening here along the Gulf Coast with hurricanes and tropical storms, that these individual thunderstorm cells that are some distance away from the center can produce some violent weather. And we also are expecting quite a bit of rain. The Mobile area, southwest Alabama, and, of course, southeast Mississippi will be the main area for some very heavy rain as it moves in late this afternoon and on through the nighttime hours. 4 to 6 inches of rain are likely. We could see as much as 8 inches of rain in some areas. And as I mentioned earlier, that this is going on up into Mississippi and eventually into Arkansas, where it could produce double-digit rainfall as it encounters that cold front.
All right, and so this is interesting, too, with that westward track. This is not going to be a big rainmaker, central Alabama, north Alabama. It's going to move on west of there.
More to the west, definitely, and over into western portions of Mississippi, probably tracking near Vicksburg or even Jackson, and then into southern portions of Arkansas and eastern Oklahoma. After that, it'll turn to the northeast, and the remnants of it, which is going to be just a big rain event, will go into the Midwest, where they've already been getting some heavy rain on that part of the country.
All right, so here comes a rain from the sky and up from the Gulf, the storm surge. Let's kind of walk through your timeline for folks, whether they be at Dolphin Island, like you just mentioned, or over at Perdido Pass, or they're up on Dog River, or you know, in Spanish Fort on the water. What do you see for surge amounts and timeline on that?
Well, we'll see the water building up through the evening hours when the wind becomes more from the southeast. And it looks like now we will see 3 to 5 feet of a storm surge occurring late tonight along the Mississippi coast and the Alabama coast west of Mobile Bay. And it's possible we could see 3 to 5 feet of a surge on the western side of Mobile Bay. The eastern side of the Mobile Bay area, and also from Fort Morgan and on east all the way over to Escambia County, Florida, it'll be 2 to 4 feet. Now, as we get into the daybreak hours, getting around 7 o'clock or 6 to 7 o'clock, that'll be a time of high tide. And so we may see figures just a little bit higher than that. Due to the high tide, and also the shape of the coastline has a lot to do with the storm surge. So in coves, concave areas, we call it, those coves along the coast, whether it be in Mississippi or coastal Alabama, then the surge can be another foot or so higher in those areas.
All right. Well, we'll be getting updates throughout the afternoon from you, and of course this evening into tomorrow morning. Staff meteorologist Dr. Bill Williams, thank you for the update, and we'll talk soon.
Okay, Sean.
All right. Latest on Gordon from Dr. Bill, and we'll do that again coming up later on this afternoon. Of course, coming up overnight and into tomorrow morning when we'll be assessing what happened in the wee hours as Gordon making landfall. Dr. Bill says sometime this evening in the Gulfport-Biloxi area, which means possibly, and that's one of the takeaways I got from that if you hadn't heard, that hurricane force winds, if Gordon becomes a hurricane, hurricane force winds, that means 74 miles and up, could be felt as far east as the west end of Dolphin Island. So that is a new piece of information there coming in. We will follow this and give you updates right here on FM Talk 1065, online at fmtalk1065.com, where we'll update Dr. Bill's weather discussion. Plus, you can go to our Twitter feed, Facebook page as well for these discussions throughout the afternoon and evening. All right, 116 FM Talk 1065, coming right back. Joined by Brendan Kirby from LifeSet.com, Yellowhammer News, and a man who has seen a couple storms in our area. Even though he's not from here, he's pretty storm-wise. We'll talk to him about the storm in Washington as well when we return.
Opener.
Pass is caught! Touchdown! Auburn is dominating this game.
Coverage begins Saturday at 3:30 p.m. on your home for Auburn football.
On your official Auburn football station, FM Talk 1065.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 1065. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
All right, 121 FM Talk 1065 and Midday Mobile on this Tuesday. By the way, the latest report there from staff meteorologist Dr. Bill Williams, where I think that's the first person, what, pretty sure it'd be the first person has talked about the fact that the hurricane force winds if Gordon increases to hurricane, and it sounded like there's a lot of people thinking it might. Sustained winds at 65 now. It's got to get to 74 or better for a Category 1 hurricane. If it makes hurricane force winds by landfall tonight, he's looking at the field of wind, the wind field here. If it goes into closer to Biloxi, could put hurricane force winds over the west end of Dauphin Island. Once again, this is just coming in, a prediction of what could be going on with Gordon. We'll keep track of this afternoon, evening, overnight as well. And, of course, a full discussion with Dr. Bill coming up tomorrow morning. And we'll put these forecasts up, continue to put them up on our Twitter feed, Facebook page, so you can share them and get the latest from a tropical weather expert, PhD in it, Dr. Bill Williams. All right, we got two storms brewing. Of course, the one, well, brewing in the Gulf and the one impacting Washington right now. Can we go to some of the B-roll audio of that storm in Washington? To me that sounds like the grown-ups on Snoopy, on Peanuts, when they were talking. I'm not exactly sure what that person was saying specifically in the protest, but some of the protests that have been going on today during the confirmation hearings of Brett Kavanaugh. With more on this, we'll talk to Brendan Kirby from LifeSet.com, Wicked Mobile's author, and also a writer in residence at his house where he is battened down, right?
Right, and that sound that you just played, that was just the Democrats on the committee.
Hey, listen, I played some of the audio last hour. It is, I said it would do a dumpster fire disservice to make a comparison between the two, but then again, I'm not going to act like I haven't seen this, because this has been happening now for a couple years.
I mean, you know, it's been happening really since Judge Bork,
yes.
When he was nominated to the Supreme Court, that is kind of marks the beginning of when this process started to change. It's hard to believe now, looking back, but Antonin Scalia was confirmed without a single dissenting vote.
Imagine that today? Can you imagine?
I mean, it's impossible to imagine. But this is just where we have devolved. And part of it is because the courts just have so much power now. It was Alexander Hamilton who said that the judiciary was the least powerful branch. It was the least dangerous branch, was the term he used, because the founders didn't consider judges had any real power. They didn't have power of the purse. They didn't have power of the sword. And so, the founders didn't really think that the courts would play such a vital role. That certainly is no longer the case, partially because other branches, particularly the congressional branch, which is where the power was supposed to be, has ceded so much of its authority. Mm-hmm. So people have They bypassed their legislators and have gone to the courts to try to get judgments that they like, and the presidency has taken on so much power. That's where the power resides. The Congress is supposed to be the most powerful of the branches, and in practice it's the weakest.
Well, it's the one that I think it's weak. Yes, sure. Have they ceded some power? Yes. But in addition, they've ceded it by lack of attention to it, right? They'd rather not have to make that decision. That's one of the things that I've celebrated, and we'll get to Attorney General Sessions in a little bit. But, you know, pressing matters. I've told people if they are, fans and supporters of marijuana legalization, they should champion Sessions, because he's going to make those members of the legislature make a decision. And if they look at the polling, they're going to figure out most Americans or majority of Americans out there have no problem with legalizing marijuana, so they'll go forward. You know, I mean,
you're right. I mean, nobody came and stole this power from the legislative branch. They've willingly given it away. One, because they'd rather not be accountable and have to make hard decisions. It's more convenient just to delegate that to the president and let him make the decision of the courts. But two, because just in practice, it's dysfunctional. We have this supermajority requirement for most legislation in the Senate, and the way it's used now, it blocks even routine legislation. And because we are so divided and so partisan, the Congress can't do big things anymore, really, because you don't have the majority necessary to do it. The one exception, really, in the last decade is Obamacare. And that was purely the result of the Democrats having, the historical oddity of having a 60-vote majority in the Senate, and they were able to get that through. Other than that, it's gridlock and it binds down. So, political actors, they don't even really go to Congress anymore. They go to the courts. They want courts to act as a legislature to impose their preferred policy outcomes, and that's why we see this, this rage that we see today. What this is a desperation among liberal activists, because they know how much power the court has, and they know that if Judge Kavanaugh is confirmed, it's going to probably present a solid conservative majority on the court for a long, long time.
Okay. You mentioned Democrat activists that are raging. At the same time, their rage, I believe, is just the coal fueling the locomotive of a Cory Booker or Kamala Harris, that somebody who wants to run for president in 2020. I mean, they're just
pawns. The more extreme the speeches this week, and the more over the top the questions, the likelier it is that the senator asking them is preparing to run for president for the presidency. Absolutely. Kamala Harris, Cory Booker, a few others. But to a large extent, they are following the rage of their own activist base. And all the people in that room that are shouting and screaming, including one person who was a little off script and was shouting down Pat Leahy, was right behind him. Someone needs to tell this woman Leahy's on her side. It's kind of desperation rage, I think, is what we're seeing.
That needs to be, because I haven't, I've just been able to look over my shoulder at one of the monitors here in the studio, but I need that clip. I got to get that clip, Dalton, if you're listening. That may be emblematic of where we are in this country with the divisive nature. This is almost like you do those where you send somebody out with a microphone and ask them questions and frame one candidate with planks of a different, different party and see how people react. And so the activists are raging, even though it's Leahy who's on their side, they're raging against him. Why? Just because it's an old dude and it must be a Republican, right?
I don't know why.
Well, the Democrats have got the lock on old
Pat
dudes.
Leahy is what makes Bernie Sanders the junior senator from Vermont.
Yes, they got the lock on the old dudes.
Definitely a lot of old guys in the Senate. But yeah, there's no way Democrats can stop this nomination, and so the Democratic senators are play acting, and it's performance art almost, so that they can signal to their activist base that they're going to do whatever they can to stop it. And, people were shouting in the room, which we see all the time, but Democratic senators themselves were trying to gum up the works and block the hearing before it even started, trying to get the Senate to postpone the proceedings.
All right. Wait, y'all listen to this. Once again, you just said what's going on in there, and I think I agree 100%. It's been going on before, but you just said it. This is performance art. And this performance art by members of the Senate will lead to regular Americans. This isn't being trolled by Russians on Twitter. This is having members of the Senate go through kabuki theater, through performance art that leads to Americans screaming everything but you're a child of God to each other on social media out there.
Right. I mean, it's sort of, I guess it's like an echo chamber. It goes both ways. The activists don't really need to be told by the senators that they should be angry. They already are angry. But then the way the senators react to it, I think it does communicate a signal to ordinary Americans that, you know, this should happen. And really, I mean, anyone, if you look at Judge Kavanaugh's record, he's a mainstream conservative justice. He's not a justice that any Democratic president would pick. But he's also not some sort of, you know, weird Trump outlier. Any Republican president could have picked him. He's well thought of by the people that he's actually worked with, including, you know, lawyers that he opposed, Bob Bennett, who represented Bill Clinton during the impeachment proceedings. And Judge Kavanaugh was on Ken Starr's staff, so they were on opposite sides. You know, he thinks he should be confirmed. And I really think there's a Yale law professor that has put up a rule that I think ought to be followed. If Democrats are going to vote no, they should be obligated to name two judges who a Republican president might plausibly want to appoint to the court that would be acceptable.
Coming right back, more with Cameron Smith, or with Brendan Kirby. Cameron was his last hour, just putting up the podcast. This hour, it's Brendan. We'll come right back and get your calls and text at 343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 135, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile on this Tuesday, watching the Gulf and the approach of Tropical Storm Gordon. Could be a minimal hurricane by landfall. The full discussion from earlier this hour with staff meteorologist Dr. Bill Williams is up on our Facebook page, Twitter feed, and website. If you go to the website, the three big things. Number one will be the update on Gordon. If you click that, you'll hear that conversation with Dr. Bill. That's the first conversation we've had where he mentioned the possibility of hurricane force winds affecting the western end of Dauphin Island. So I imagine past the jetty, passed on, you know, to the spit of land. But I mean, we're talking about, you know, if it's 74 miles an hour on the west end, on the other side of the riprap, and it's 72 down at the houses. Who, I mean, it's plenty. So once again, this is going to change throughout the afternoon or be updated throughout the afternoon. We will keep updating it, so stay with us. We'll get you the latest on Gordon. All right, continue our conversation with Brendan Kirby with Life's Edge, also the author of Wicked Mobile, which is in, number one, online pharmacies and local booksellers right now. You can go get a copy. I would say if you go to the pharmacy, you get a chance of having a snack with your book, but, you know.
That's always best, the hot fries and book combo.
It does leave the pages kind of stained, but then at least you know where you've read to. If people want to go online, they just go to Wicked Mobile, or do they come to your Facebook, or what's the best way to do that?
I mean, I always encourage people to check out the Wicked Mobile Facebook page, but, you know, to actually place an order, you can go directly through Arcadia Publishing, the publisher. You can go to Amazon. You can go to Barnes & Noble. Any one of a number of online booksellers.
All right. As we continue our conversation with what's going on in Washington, and I love it. You just pointed out, and we have before, but I hope Americans who would, you see them out there right now, and I know you see them directly in your Twitter feed, but that are just siding with this senator or that senator on either side of the aisle, and they're fighting out a proxy war out there, when in reality, a lot of the senators up there are playing a part for effect for political reasons in 2020 or further down the road.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Yeah. If you are going to be running for president as a Democrat in 2020, you cannot be viewed as soft on really any issue, but particularly not when it comes to the court. So you can't, obviously it would be disqualifying if you were to vote for a nominee that Trump put forward, but, you know, sort of even, you know, recognizing that he's a qualified justice or something, you know, would not be, you know, that's disqualifying now in our politics. And, you know, it's a very rare senator like Lindsey Graham from South Carolina who votes for the nominees of presidents of both parties. under the thinking that, you know, the old-fashioned notion that the Senate should provide its advice and consent and only reject nominees who are not qualified in some way, you know, or have some, you know, huge ethical problem or, you know, for whatever reason aren't qualified to do the job. And, you know, I mean, I think anyone that knows about the law knows that a Yale Law School graduate with 12 years on the federal bench is well thought of by people in his courtroom is qualified in that sense. They're just voting because they don't like his decisions.
All right. I want to switch gears here, too, to a book that's due out next week and making a big splash, at least in what media folks are saying about it. I'll say this. I'll take the Alabama angle that's not being picked up everywhere, but I'm an Alabamian, so I take this angle. As part of Woodward's book out here, a quote, mocking Sessions' accent, Trump added, "This guy is mentally retarded. He's this dumb Southerner. He couldn't even be a one-person country lawyer down in Alabama." If that's true, that is pretty not only specifically attacking Attorney General Sessions. I think it's kind of an attack on people in Alabama.
Well, not only that, perhaps it's an attack on the guy who appointed Sessions too. you know, as we talked about this before, Trump sometimes acts as if he's some sort of a passive observer in all this. Whenever he attacks, you know, people in his own administration, I mean, he's the one who put them there.
Right.
It's kind of a you know, a strange you know, contradiction. You know, all this, you know, all these tweets about these documents that the Justice Department is withholding. I mean, Trump has the power to order them to be turned over. I mean, you know, he's the president. He's the head of the executive branch. He could just outright order the Justice Department to produce anything that Congress wants. And he acts like he's a political commentator.
It's wild to me, too, that on the heels of what came out, I guess it was yesterday on Labor Day, with a skewering of the Attorney General for basically, I mean, once again, you know, laying in the bed you make, as I think a lot of people voted for President Trump to go to Washington, drain the swamp, clean things up, and get rid of the corruption. Let's just talk about in the relationship between the president and the attorney general. How many times do we go round and round with Eric Holder being less an AG and more of a henchman for President Obama? And here we go. President Trump is saying, hey, you know, I need some more political, I'm paraphrasing here, some more political action from the attorney general here. We've got it's his fault that we've got these two Republicans that are being investigated here at election time.
Well, I mean, the thing with Trump is you don't need a tell-all book by a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist to ferret out all the secrets that are going on behind closed doors, because Trump says it and tweets it out loud. you know, it's, I mean, that's an interesting anecdote about making fun of Jeff Sessions' accent, but, I mean, that's not nearly as outrageous as tweeting out loud that the Justice Department, you know, should be used to go after your political enemies and protect your political friends. I mean, that's something he said, you know. You don't need, like, a Woodward book for that. And that's it's a very hard thing to defend when you think about it, because what you're saying is that the Justice Department shouldn't apply the law equally and impartially. It should protect, you know, Republican senators and members of Congress. You know, because if you hold them accountable for breaking the law, you're going to cost them a seat. I mean, that's, you know, way outside our tradition. And, you know, recognizing that both of those members of Congress haven't been convicted of anything, they're innocent until proven guilty. But, you know, if the Justice Department thinks that they have enough evidence that they committed a crime, I mean, how can you look the other way? You know, we'll see if it comes out. I mean, if it comes out that they brought these indictments and they have no evidence and they're trumped up charges, I'll claim the right to revise and extend my comments, as they say, but I'd be surprised if that's the case. I doubt they brought charges against sitting members of Congress without pretty strong evidence.
Yeah, I mean, if it's made up charges, I would say, number one, you would retract anything you say, and hopefully heads would roll amongst it. So I right now I'm going to lean to the sign that this is genuine. And once again, if y'all didn't hear the tweet, President tweets, two long-running Obama-era investigations of two very popular Republican congressmen were brought to a well-publicized charge just ahead of the midterms by the Jeff Sessions Justice Department. I like how he's two easy wins, now in doubt because there's not enough time. Good job, Jeff. I see that and I go, what are you doing? What are you doing, Trump? And then I'm looking here at the text line. A bunch of people are, yeah, more of that. Really, y'all? I mean, really?
Well, I mean, I just, this is, again, I mean, this is sort of how justice works in some undemocratic countries or quasi-democratic countries that don't work very well. Really, I mean, what Trump should be saying is, our system is working well, and it doesn't matter if someone has been supportive of me in the past. If they committed a crime, they're going to have to answer to that just like anyone else. And that's the politically smart way to play it, I think. in addition to being the constitutionally correct way to play it as well. I mean, the charges are in the case of Chris Collins in New York, is that he used inside knowledge as a member of Congress to, dump stock from a company that was, about to lose a lot of money. And in the case of Duncan Hunter, the congressman from California, was that he was using campaign funds for a bunch of personal expenses. I mean, if that's true, I don't know how you defend that, if those charges are true, that you're not going to, you're going to look the other way on that because that's your political friends. I mean, you mentioned, can't remember whether it was off air or just after we came on air. Imagine if President Obama had said something like that.
Right.
Democratic member of Congress, who is the William Jefferson from Louisiana?
There you go.
Who had the $100,000 in
cold
his freezer.
Cash. Yeah, cold
and,
cash.
And I can't even remember whether that occurred, when Obama was president or not. But what if he said, something like that? That's a can't be indicting our friends in Congress. I mean...
That's what I'm saying. And it would be a good exercise to turn it around. Now, people will then turn it around, as I've seen, and said, well, but they did it, so it's President Trump's right to do it. No, it's not. It's not right.
Yeah, well, I guess it's President Trump's right to express his opinion, but that doesn't mean that, he's right and correct in what he's saying. I think the rule that everyone should do is switch the roles, and would you feel the same way if it was the other side doing this exact same conduct? And I've always tried to do that, just as a check to myself. Am I being fair here? Am I being partisan? Am I letting my own political views color the way I think about something? And it's hard to, I think, truthfully and objectively say that you would say it was okay if a president that you didn't agree with politically, said that the Justice Department should protect his friends and punish his enemies. I don't know anyone who can truthfully say that would be okay.
And trust me, y'all, plenty of Democrats did that during the 8 years of President Obama, but I called it out then, too. So, I mean, it's not, one's not equivalent. And then I guess before we wrap here, I'll tell you what, if you can hold on 1 second, we'll run to break and come back. I want to ask you if you have any Nikes left in your house. You have
Nikes.
Coming back with Brendan Kirby, straight ahead right here on FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Go to our Facebook page. You can go to the Twitter feed and go to the website and get the latest in-depth discussion on Gordon, tropical storm, maybe eventually Hurricane Gordon, with Dr. Bill.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 151 FM Talk, 106.5 Midday Mobile on this Tuesday. Feinbaum on the way in just a little bit, but we'll keep you up to date with the progress and track timeline, all the information around Gordon throughout the afternoon and evening here at FM Talk 106.5. Continue our conversation with Brendan Kirby from Lyset.com, also the author of Wicked Mobile, and a man that is flinging any kind of responsibility into the wind and not even preparing for a tropical storm. right?
Yeah, this is, you know, maybe I'm like Lieutenant Dan on the top of the trim vessel, you know, yelling at God and daring him to strike me down. But I did not do a lot of in-depth hurricane prep, so hopefully that won't come back to haunt me.
All right, let's talk about prep there in your shoe closet. You got any Nikes?
You know, I one of my Facebook friends, made up a post about the whole Nike thing, and why don't you just give away your Nike shoes? Not me. This is the universal. Why don't you give away your Nike shoes to the poor rather than burn them? Because I guess some people were burning them. And my answer is, I don't know. I've never been able to afford Nike shoes. So. It's an academic discussion to me. I guess I could burn my Nike shoes, but, boy, they're pretty expensive. So.
Yeah, and I'm not allowed to wear them at my age. I got to wear the New Balance. As I get made fun of all the time, if my shoes ever show up on social media, they gang up on me and say, oh, look at your dad shoes. I say, well, I'm a dad. So, you know, I don't have the jorts to go with them, but I do work the New Balance, the dad walking shoes. With that being said, I got to ask you, just on a business side, I can't figure this out. I mean, the political discussion is one thing, and let it roll. I get what people are frustrated by. I understand that. But why does Nike do that business-wise? Because right now, and Dalton pointed out something interesting, a couple of years ago we were talking about Nike coming out with a hijab. To me, that frustrated people, but business-wise, it made sense. That opens up more markets to sell their products. A move like this, to me, risk losing market share. I mean, their stock is in the dump today. We'll put it that way.
Yeah, I mean, my only guess is, and they know their customer base a lot better than I do, is that they've concluded that, whatever hit they'll take, from people that would be offended by this, they'll gain more from the notoriety of it or the publicity or the controversy that generates, or maybe they'll get a bunch of people that will run out and buy more Nike shoes just to send a message. I don't know. I mean, that's just my guess. I mean, you know, Nike can do whatever it wants. It's a private
sure
company.
Sure can. Oh, I'm not going to say.
If this is the best way to market their shoe, then let them do that. But that's just my guess, is that maybe they figure that the people who are most upset about this are older white people that aren't buying Nike shoes anyway, so what does it matter? I don't know whether that's true or not, but I would guess that they didn't just do this on a whim and they calculated the market and figured that this was the best move.
I maybe they got some focus group out there that I'm not familiar with, but anything that, you know, trying to expand your audience by blocking out another audience, just, I mean, whatever widget, tennis shoes or whatever, just seems like bad business. Maybe I'll be proven incorrect on this down the road, but it seems like a really bad business choice, let alone one that flies in the face of, a lot of people listen to the station and their political views on this.
Yeah, I mean, but again, from Nike's consideration, it doesn't matter what the public writ large thinks. It matters what their customers or their potential customers think. And maybe that's different. I mean, maybe the people that this is most likely to upset to the point where they would say, I'm not buying any more Nike shoes, are people who wouldn't be buying Nike shoes anyway.
Sure. I mean, that's a fair question. I don't have that data in front of me. I'm just saying that it seems like my best guess is one doesn't eclipse the other, you know?
Otherwise, you're right. But, you know, look at it this way. The late-night talk show hosts, the comedy hosts that are so stridently anti-Trump, you would think that wouldn't be a good business decision. And why turn off half of your potential audience? But yet, I mean, they've all, gone in that direction. Even Jimmy Fallon, who when he started out wasn't very political, has gotten more political and anti-Trump. And I assume that there's a business reason for it. Certainly there hadn't been, like counter-programming that's sprung up. And I mean, maybe they're just so ideologically driven that they don't care. And if it risks in business, that's they're willing to take that. But I mean, that doesn't seem to be Jimmy Fallon. I mean, he never really struck me as someone that was a very ideological person. But he's gone down that road too. So they must think that there's a good business reason for it.
All right, Brendan Kirby with Lifeset.com. People want to reach out to you on Twitter. Where do they go?
I think go to at Brendan K. Kirby. They can read the stuff on Lifeset.com and our coverage of the hearings.
There we go. Thank you. I will talk to you very soon.
All right. Hey, thanks a lot.
All right. That is Brendan Kirby. That's a wrap for today. We will be going to Paul Feinbaum in just a second, but we'll keep you updated through Dr. Bill's forecast and updates throughout the afternoon and evening on what's happening here with Gordon. I can tell you this, a few showers in our area right now, a shower out in the middle of the bay, tracking towards Dog River, a few offshore, looks to be about 30, 35 miles south of Fort Morgan and Dauphin Island, but the big block of rain back to our east affecting the Pensacola area, and one of those feeder bands looks like it's going to make landfall here in the next probably half hour or so or less between Pensacola and Fort Walton. So we're keeping an eye on that. And remember, the latest updates from Dr. Bill, you can get through our website as well, fmtalk1065.com. Just click the story in our three big things. Number one there, Tropical Storm Gordon. It'll give you the latest report there. And of course, check out our Twitter feed and Facebook for more information this afternoon, evening, and through the evening. All right. Feinbaum on the way next, which, by the way, talked about some of the college football games over the weekend. I'm not at the bottom of the stack of our college pick'em. I'm tied in a, like, 16-way tie for 72nd place. So, I mean, it could be worse. I mean, some of y'all did quite well in week one. Good stuff. All right, see you in the morning. Mobile Mornings.